start remembering what you hear.
Well, hi out there, and welcome to...
And now, the world's foremost authority.
Hey guys, this is Monitor Esperto, also known as Jamie, and this is the Capoeira Podcast. We have a great show for you this week. For one, happy Halloween, or early Halloween. I hope that costume of that slutty interpretation of whatever it is that could possibly be relevant to this time gets you somewhere that night. I hope you guys are having a good time. We have a lot for you today. First, let's hear some events. All right, so... November 1st, Casa de Capoeira, Johannesburg, South Africa, will be having their Bachizado, as will CDO Los Angeles Bachizado with Mestre Shikochi, October 29th to November 1st, which is this weekend. Also happening this weekend is Capoeira Guanabara in Brooklyn, New York, October 28th to November 1st. And in the week of November, Capoeira Brazil San Francisco will be hosting its 7th Bachizado, supervised by Mestre Paulinho Sabia, November 4th to the 8th. Also in November, Monday, November 2nd to Saturday, November 7th, will be Capoeira Luanda Houston's 15th annual Bachizado. Also happening November 5th to the 7th, 4th annual Capoeira Festival by CDO, Charlotte, North Carolina, by Mestre Esquilo and Contra Mestre Zumbi, supervised by Mestre Suasuna. That should be cool. Also happening in New York, Capoeira Monjingo Com Expressão, 11th annual Bachizado in Rochester, New York, November 4th through 8th. November 5th through 8th, Sul da Bahia, Santa Barbara, under Contra Mestre Sheen. We'll be having, celebrating 20 years of Capoeira in Santa Barbara. Definitely check that out. They are an awesome school. I am friends with a lot of their students. Definitely check it out. They also have a restaurant. Check out their restaurant. Check it out there. November 7th, Grupo Nassau, Pernambuco in Ireland by Professor Testa, supervised by Mestre Negro Gino in Kerry, Ireland. Let's see, what else do we have? Grupo de Terra Nossa Bachizado, November 9th to the 15th, in Sandton, South Africa. We also have Capoeira Cagara in Boynton Beach, Florida. November 13th to the 15th, Artelita Festa de Bachizado in Contro and Varaus for Matura. That's going to be in Lomita, California, November 13th to the 15th. Definitely check that out for all you California people out there. And let's see, Cordão de Ouro, South Africa, will be hosting their 7th Bachizado in Cape Town from the 18th to the 21st of November. And then as we get into that late November, not only is it going to be my birthday on the 20th, we're also heading some Zumbi events. Capoeira Batuque, Culver City, under Mestre Men. Is going to be having their 9th annual Zumbi event, November 19th to the 22nd. As also Zumba Archie in Chicago, Illinois, is going to be having a Zumbi event, November 19th to the 22nd, with special guest Contra Mestre Malandro from Filhos de Bimba de Escola Capoeira. And that school is headed under Mestrande Marisa. So take your pick. If you're in the East Coast, the West Coast, shit, if you're even in South Africa, Europe, there are events. So pick one and go. So a couple weeks ago, I wanted to support a friend's school. So I went to Cordão de Ouro, Los Angeles's fundraiser and workshops that they had. And for $15, you didn't get one, you didn't get two, but you got three fucking workshops, which is like $5 per, which is a steal. They had instructors from up north come down to teach. And I love Cordão de Ouro because their movements is not a vocabulary that I'm not very familiar with. It's something that's a little bit more different than what I do at Batuki. But it was awesome, and I got to talk to regular students, higher-ups, parents of kids, and I just really love the community that they had. They're definitely a school that's trying to come up and to try to keep thriving. So here are some interviews that I have.
So my name is Contre Mestre Xangô, from Cordel de Ouro Bay Area, aluno do Mestre Chicote lá em Paris, é de Minas. So it's a pleasure for me to come out here and help my sister's school out here in L.A. and help the capoeira community in L.A. because California has a lot of capoeira, but sometimes it's divided from the southern capoeira and northern capoeira, and we actually all know each other. When we come together, it just takes capoeira to another space, and we're trying to, you know, show the other coast how we do it in the West Coast.
So, like, you're just helping out?
Yes. My husband trains, and my two children, my 8-year-old daughter and my 5-year-old son, so I'm the cheerleader. I sit on the sidelines and take care of business behind the scenes.
Are you excited?
Yeah, I think it's great. The kids are really excited to move up in their cordales. I think it's awesome to finally bring a CDO bachizado to L.A. It's great to have Chicote come in town finally. We're all waiting and anticipating his arrival, so yeah, we're all excited.
Okay, I'm Monitor Cocinero. Belong to Cordon de Oro, Los Angeles, and this is my first time making a batizado, and I'm just kind of excited that, you know, all these support that I'm getting from all the other schools, especially Batuki, and I don't know, I'm just...
When is your event?
My event, that will be Halloween weekend. So it starts on the 29th of October, and it ends on November 1st.
So, are you doing anything cool?
No, but I'm getting a lot of ideas about, you know, dressing up for, you know, for Batizado Day. But we'll see. I guess it all depends on how it goes. Like I said, it's my first time, so some of the things I'm just kind of going with, you know, with how it is, you know, every day.
How do you like the fundraiser right now that you put together?
Fundraiser is doing good. Again, you know, the turnout is it's been good so far. We'll see tonight because, you know, tonight we're gonna have our feijoada, you know, completa, and that's probably where, you know, most of the people are gonna, you know, attend because everybody likes to eat and drink and have fun. So that's it.
All right, so this week my guest is Santo Riva, and he is a capoeirista and a physical therapist who owns his own practice. A couple weeks ago, he advertised that he was going to be doing a mobility and rehab workshop at Capoeira Besori, which is a sister school of Batsuki in Santa Monica, and I got this idea to get him into my show, and it was awesome because we talked about... Basically, what happens during class, like what could happen, the potential of an injury, and all that sort of stuff. It was really cool. I learned a lot. I think anyone that trains and has a passion, a physical passion, whether it be capoeira or not capoeira, it could be CrossFit, rock climbing, volleyball, whatever. I think that this episode is important because I think a lot of times we forget and we don't want to get help. Sometimes we're just scared to get help or we don't have the money. So we just put it off and just forget it and think that ice or a wrap will help when we might have to go, you know, get help. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope it kind of opens you up. I hope that you're well informed. All right, here it is. Capoeira Podcast, Season 2, Episode 19, Training Smart. Not hard, coming right at you, straight into your face hole.
My name is Santo Riva. I don't have an apellido, so I'm just Santo. And I started training in 2004 with Saleh and Capoeira Sul da Bahia in San Francisco. I moved and I trained with a couple different groups. I trained in Perugia with Coquinho Baiano under Mestre Dozimio, I trained with Nestor Amen and Batuki. Those are probably like the main places I trained, and then a couple other places around the way. And I played for about 5 years, and then I stopped.
And then life.
But I'm still around in the community.
I mean, did you always want to be a physical therapist? Like, or was this just floating around and then you decided, like, I want a career?
So in 2003, I started doing personal training, and I was always interested in movement and the human body, and I just always thought it was so cool that you could, like, train and get stronger and, you know, do these amazing things. Like, I always wanted to be a ninja when I was really little, but I don't know. I had no idea if people wanted to be a ninja. Unfortunately, I never became a ninja, but it still is cool
still
to think
stars.
About being a ninja.
You're old, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And a gun.
Yep. That's for the judo.
Yeah.
You don't know, Meng. It was after I started training capoeira, and I was trying to figure out what I was going to be doing with my real adult life and how to make money. And personal training was cool, but I wanted to get a little more out of it and have a little more stability. And so I decided to go to physical therapy school. I got my doctorate in physical therapy at USC in 2011, and then I did a residency and got my board certified orthopedic clinical specialist, worked at different outpatient sports practices, and earlier this year my wife and I had a baby, and with that change, I decided it'd be a good time to quit my job and start my own business, because that just totally makes sense. And I get to spend more time. Get to spend more time with my kid, and I love it. Parenthood is amazing. But I started Victory Performance and Physical Therapy with the goal of teaching people how to move better, That's what I want to do, I get how important it is for people to be able to move the way that they want to move. I love working with athletes, but I also love working with the 96-year-old who maybe just broke their hip and they need to be able to get up so that they can go to the restroom and just do, you know, things that us young people take advantage or take for granted.
So you own your own physical therapy office now?
I do. I have a practice. I do a couple different things. I treat people at their homes or if they have like a certain location where they want to be seen. Mm-hmm. And I have a facility in the area, in the Culver City area, where I can treat people that are either too far away or out of my area that I go to. Mm-hmm. Or if they maybe need more space or different equipment than would be feasible to bring to someone's home.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to, like, I kind of want to go through, like, the different stages of maybe a couple of these, so, like, from starting to an intermediate to advanced, and then possibly to, I mean, for me, I started when I was in my early 20s, and I really didn't have any injuries. Like, I've sprained stuff, but I've never fractured anything. Generally, I think I've been okay in terms of injuries, but I feel like back in the day, like, nobody really did any research on anything. No one I knew was drinking protein drinks. No one had foam rollers. Like, nobody had, like, lacrosse balls. Now I have all that stuff. I think it's my background in CrossFit, but I mean, but that's when I was really young, and I would just train, and then I'd go to sleep, and then I'd train again, you know, like, and I wasn't that flexible when I started. So what would you recommend for people just starting capoeira?
I think that, you brought up a good point. You started when you were in your early 20s. Me too. And, you know, I mean, when we're in our early 20s, we're, like, practically invincible. Like, we heal really well. We don't get injured. Mm-hmm. And
you know, now me in my mid-30s, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel old sometimes, you know. I can't do anything without hurting myself. So I think it should start right from the beginning, and I think that it's maybe something that people like myself should be doing more to educate the instructors and the people at the top that have the greatest influence on students, and especially students right from when they start, and that there should be a good deal of emphasis placed on making sure that people are stretching properly, because, you know, especially with capoeira, it's an art where you need to be flexible. I'm sure probably most martial arts, it's very important to be flexible, because you're throwing kicks or doing movements that require a good deal of flexibility, and just doing those movements over and over and over again will help a little bit with flexibility, but your body is smart, and it's, if you're telling it to, you know, kick this high, it's going to try to kick that high regardless of how it gets there. So if that means that, you know, ideally you would be more flexible in your hips, so that you could kick to the height of your face, but you don't have the flexibility through your hips, you're going to get that someplace else, and typically that ends up being in your lower back or in your spine. And it's those repetitive movements that you do over and over and over again that cause micro traumas that end up leading to the bigger traumas and, you know, herniated discs, for this example. You see a lot of those from that excessive movement happening at your spine versus happening in your hips where it should be happening.
I think that was a good question about the back. I know a lot of male capoeiristas with back problems. I don't know a lot of women. Like, I maybe met one woman with, like, a back issue. I know, of course, there's a physical difference between male and female. Like, females, like, you know, they have to have babies, so their, like, lower portion of their body tends to be stronger, whereas males, they have the, like, the stronger upper body. That's why we don't see a lot of, I feel like, females flipping unless they have that gymnastics background. So what do you think could be maybe some physical differences, and not only that, like, precautions that male and female capoeiristas, like, could take in terms of, like, stretching? Like, do you know an area that they should focus on? We could start with the guys first.
I don't know if it's necessarily a gender thing, but typically what you see, what I see, is that women on the whole are more flexible than men. And so for a martial art that's heavy with kicking, if they are more flexible through their hips, they're going to get a lot less strain through their low backs. And so that's just the biomechanics of the movement. And typically, if you don't have that mobility through your hips, through your hamstrings would be the kind of the most important place, hamstrings and glutes. You're going to end up getting a lot of that that movement, or the flow over movement, or the compensations through your spine, and that's how you end up with back problems. So that's typically how people are going to end up with back problems. So I guess if we're looking at areas that would be important to mobilize and make sure that people are hitting, especially men, I would first look at their hamstrings and their glutes, because that's typically where that limitation is. So,
do the hamstrings kind of like, what is it? It kind of ties to the shin, does it?
So your hamstrings, they're going to cross two joints. Your hamstrings are a muscle, they're a group of muscles, but they cross two joints. So they're going to cross your hips, and they're also going to cross your knee. So what that means is that they also have two main actions that they do. They extend your hip, meaning they're going to bring your thigh or your femur, they're going to bring it back behind your pelvis, and they're also going to bend your knee. They're going to flex your knee.
So when you are throwing a kick, typically you're going into hip flexion and also knee extension, which are the two movements that the hamstring, if it's tight, is going to limit. So you're throwing a kick and you've got a long lever, your leg is a pretty long lever, and you're trying to throw it as hard as you can. So as soon as that hamstring isn't going to allow your leg to go into any more flexion or knee extension, that's when you end up compensating by usually having some twist in your spine or going into flexion in your spine. It's kind of similar to what would happen if you think about like the butt wink for someone that's squatting or deadlifting. When they go down too low, if they don't have full range of motion through their hips, you'll see their sacrum or their butt tuck underneath as they get near that low point in a squat. So it's a similar thing that's happening, and you're loading it up, so it's a very common it's kind of equivocal to like the dreaded butt wink that you get from people that are doing Olympic lifting or squatting, because it's going to put a lot of pressure through your lumbar spine and specifically through the discs.
Okay, and what about females? Females definitely they are more flexible. They do a lot of bridges, I think, is really prevalent in women's games, I feel like. Women's games tend to be a little bit more linear than men because of the fact that a lot of us just can't flip. I mean, we've tried, I've tried to go to gymnastics places and go to, the focus and stuff, but anyway, I still have that fear, so it's never going to happen. I've finally come to that. So I try to, I try to just change up the levels, going up and down, spinning, going around people, so it's not just, maybe a boring game. Do you think there are any, prevalent injuries or, risks that certain female competitors could possibly have the potential to have?
That's a good question. Just thinking about it from a biomechanical stance and I haven't trained in a while, so I don't have eyes on the ground of what women are being injured or what areas. So, I can't think of anything offhand that would be really specific to women. Is there anything that you see, and then I could maybe talk upon it?
Shoulder injury, and I think tendonitis from the elbows from trying to do a lot of the low movements on the ground movements, mm-hmm. and I have that, and I just try to tape it up nice, but it really is a constant problem that I find myself wrestling with.
Okay.
Day in and day out.
Okay, so this is what we're getting to, some free treatment advice?
No, but no. I think it's very, I go to a lot of events, I still go to events, and I'm still definitely active, and I see a lot of the same knee braces, ankle braces, a lot of the elbow, I wear the elbow brace from time to time, wrist guards.
Yeah, definitely. Those are definitely named all the joints that are going to take a lot of the brunt of training hard. You're definitely going to end up with overuse injuries, and those are those tendonitis type things that don't go away because people don't want to stop training. So that was that's one of the things that I saw when I was training and battled with is, okay, it hurts a little bit now, but I can still train. And so you keep training and you keep training, it still hurts, Now it's hurting a little bit longer after class, where before, as soon as I stopped doing the movement, it didn't hurt. Okay, but by the next day, it's fine. And then it's bothering me, but in a couple days, it's fine. But if you're training every day or every other day, then that really doesn't give you much time or your body much time to heal. And what happens is there's an actual change in the quality of the tissues, especially if we're talking about tendons, where when it first starts hurting, we call it a tendinitis, where it's sort of this acute inflammatory process, and that's where things like maybe ice would be helpful at that time. But when you keep training and keep putting these loads on our tendons and not give them a chance to heal, a different process starts happening, and it's no longer this inflammatory process, but the actual tissue quality of that tendon, of the collagen, starts to degrade. And it becomes a lot more difficult for your body to do what it has to do to heal itself. And so unfortunately, that's when people get into this cycle of maybe taking a week off or taking 2 weeks off and getting a little bit better. And so they go back and train, and then it gets bad again. And then they're out again for a couple weeks. You see them, you know, they're the ones playing music in the Hoda, but they're not training. And then they come back, and, you know, now it's 6 months later, and they're still talking about this wrist injury or this shoulder injury. And it's tough because you don't want to stop training. And it happens to all athletes. And I think it... Again, and maybe this is where I can come in and educate some of the people that are teaching or train, you know, some of the instructors to say, you know, you need to try to recognize when people are hurt and give them the advice that they need to, you know, take the time off so that they can get better, so that they can come back and train hard. Because when you're training,
I know teachers, well, they talk about like, you know, we got to get warm, we got to stretch to a certain degree, but yeah. I really wanted to hear from an educator standpoint and a professional standpoint. So I feel like there's a lot of debate on how warm-ups should be run. I've gone to some warm-ups where it's kind of like, I don't know how to say it, like maybe active stretching, like they go right into alus, go, you know, right into olays and kicks, but it's very, like, it's not high kicks, you know, it's not like, enough, but it's very slow where you're kind of just getting warm. And then I've been to some warm-ups where you're just full-on sprinting, yeah. You know, like, and it's like lunges, it's almost like CrossFit, like, it's almost kind of like, and then I've been to some where it's just like right into circuit training, where it's like, okay, one station does this, and after 2 minutes we move, and then I've been to some where it's like straight up stretching at the start. What do you think is probably the most effective, in your opinion?
So, in an ideal world, or if I was leading it, I would probably go with an active warm-up. Definitely go with an active warm-up. I'm a big proponent, too, of doing some foam rolling beforehand, just to get the joints, maybe, you know, open up some of the joints a little bit more before you get into the warm-up, so that as you're doing this, as you're doing your active warm-up, you know, if you had some adhesions, you've kind of already opened those up or loosened them up. I like to kind of think of, you know, if you have some like muscular adhesions, think of it as kind of like a knot in a Chinese finger handcuffs, where you can't open it up all the way, and so the foam rolling, at least for like muscle work, helps to take that that crisscross pattern or that adhesion and kind of open it up, so that you can get a benefit of doing an active stretch through that area. So let's start with some foam rolling. I like when movements that you're going to be doing in the class are incorporated, so maybe at a slower pace, but you know, still going through that movement, because that's going to specifically target the types of movements that you're going to be doing later in the class. But they should be done slowly and controlled, versus what you're going to be doing in the Hoda at, you know, at full speed, and really going, you know, balls to the wall or whatever with your movements. So that that also helps to prime the nervous system when you're going through movements that you're going to be doing later, because it just it gets your body moving the way that it should be moving when you are doing it at full speed. So there's nothing wrong with doing some like, you know, lunges in there, or you know, maybe movements that you're not exactly doing during class, and that also kind of goes back to like some cross training, like doing different movements that you're not doing the whole class, because it happens with, you know, with overtraining. And if you're doing, or if your warm up is 10-15 minutes, tack that on to all the time that you're going to be spending doing all those movements already in the class. So it doesn't hurt to do movements like that, like a squat or a lunge. There are some special active warm-ups that I like to do that I'll be teaching in the mobility workshop. I'll also put those up. I'm going to put them up online pretty soon, too, so people can come to my my website or my YouTube channel and see some good active stretches that they can do that are not necessarily targeted just to capoeira, like they're not capoeira movements, but they're movements that are going to stretch your muscles. Yeah, functional movements that are three-dimensional and stretch your muscles in all different planes, different directions.
Okay, so we have some viewer questions. Jackie writes, what are some good cross-training exercises to do when not training capoeira that could fit her game?
Cross-training, well, firstly, flexibility is really going to be key. So I'm going to plug physical therapy again. So I think that everybody should be going and seeing a physical therapist once a year, and especially active people and people in the capoeira community who, I don't know, maybe jump into training or don't have a big background in flexibility. There are a lot of things that we as physical therapists can look at in the way that you move to help you put together a program of this is going to be very specific to you. You know, it's tough. It's tough to give like a, for me to give like a blanket, like, oh, do this, do this, do this. I feel like, as with most things, the more you know about a subject, the harder it becomes to just say this is all you need to do, because there's really not a one-stop shop for everybody. But in general, in terms of flexibility, I'll say the most important areas would be your ankles, your hips, and your thoracic spine, so your upper back. Those are areas that can get kind of gunked up and stiff, especially for people that are sitting all day, which is just about everybody in our society.
Yeah.
If you don't have the mobility in those areas, you're going to end up screwing up your knees, your elbows, and your low backs, which are the areas that are kind of stuck between... they're stuck between the areas that are important. So you've got your knees between your ankles and your hips. Your knees, we call them kind of dummy joints because they're a product of what happens at your ankles and your hips. Ends up, the knees end up taking the brunt of it. So if you're not moving well through your ankles and your hips, your knees are kind of stuck in the middle and they get fucked. Kind of the same thing with your low back, which is between your hips and your upper back. If you're not moving well through there, your low back's getting fucked. And shoulders are important too. I'd say most capoeiristas, it would benefit them to have a number one, a shoulder mobility program so that you know, looking at your shoulder range of motion, are you able to get your arms all the way straight up, biceps by your ears? Or when you raise your arms up, are you, you notice a bend in your elbow, or you're not able to get one arm up as high as the other arm? Because if you think about, like if you're doing an alley-oop, and you can't get your arms all the way up there, but you're still doing that, like what's going on? You know, there's going to be some compensations that are happening. So, and shoulder stability too. So you got to have the shoulder mobility, and you need to have shoulder stability. So looking at maybe some rotator cuff strengthening exercises, making sure that your core is staying very strong. I'd say those are probably the most important. So mobility would be kind of the key thing to work on if you're not training. And that's also, I'd say, for anybody that's injured, depending on what your injury is, you know, it's great to go into to your school and play music and train music on those days that you're injured, but shoot, also, you know, get on the floor and do some stretching, stretch your hips out, stretch your ankles out, make sure that your back is moving the way that it should be, and take advantage of that time to just say, okay, well, I can't get in the huddle, but I'm going to stretch, and when I get, you know, off this shoulder injury or off this wrist injury, I'm not going to be so far behind because I've actually increased my flexibility in this time, which will hopefully help prevent you from getting another injury.
Dennis writes, how should you safely fall from a takedown? I feel like there's lots of different takedowns.
Yeah.
There's one where your calf gets kind of out, so you fall on your back. There could be some where you fall forward. Others where, I don't even know how to explain it. I sprained my wrist. This is like the only time I've ever gotten a sprain. I was taking out my Chisota and I kind of was still standing. So I think that's a pretty interesting question. How should you simply land a takedown?
Man, you just got to not get taken down. You got to train harder so they don't get you. I mean, you know, number one, you got to make sure that you're not going to hit your head, right? I mean, that would be probably the worst thing that could happen is you get chisotoed and you end up hitting your head, right? So other than that, I mean, what's going to happen is you're going to, number one, you don't have a lot of time to think about what you're going to do.
Yeah, it's so quick.
Yeah. And that's a great question. I don't know if there's a great answer for it other than don't get taken down.
I don't know. My only thing is probably I literally will just try to relax my whole body. I won't try to brace myself with my hands. You know, because there's that possibility of, it's almost like the way I think about it is when I go snowboarding and I know a boss eat it, I just try to go limp as quickly as possible and relax.
I thought you were going to equate it to a drunk in a car accident.
Almost.
Don't they always end up doing better because they don't tense up?
I mean, I drink before I snowboard too, but I'm pretty sober when I do cowboard. Yeah, I'm pretty sober when I do cowboard, but...
yeah, maybe go limp, I don't know. I mean, but I could see the only problem with that is if you go too limp, then your head is probably going to hit the floor.
Yeah.
So...
You're talking about the risk of concussion possibly?
Yeah, exactly. Or a neck injury.
Do you know any... Maybe we should just even educate the symptoms of a concussion, because I've seen chicks and guys, like, just hit their head, just get bounced. They just bounce. We kind of get freaked out. We get an ice pack, but it's not like... We can kind of follow up with them when, you know, they go home.
Right. Well, you know, if you're experiencing any nausea, bad thing, or a headache right after a bad thing, if you have immediate neck pain or unable to turn your head after hitting your head, also a bad thing. That's almost like, go to the hospital, bad thing, if you can't move your neck after a hit to your head, and you're out for the rest of the day. So if you're getting any symptoms like nausea or any of the other things that I mentioned, one of the things that also instructors or someone can look at to see how someone's doing is if people's eyes dilate. So you get your flashlight on your phone, and you want to go from outside the eye in. And when that light shines on the person's pupil, it should constrict. Those are ways that you can test to see how people are doing, and if you aren't getting that constriction, that's something that might warrant a call to the paramedics. So hopefully people aren't getting hurt that much. Hopefully everyone's okay, but that's a good question about concussions. And you know, make sure that you rest after. You're going to have to take a couple days off after. I think, thank God, there's not a lot of that happening, but
yeah.
People can get taken down and hit their head, and that definitely could happen, or get kicked in the head by accident. Your mea lua, I mean, that's gonna rattle your brain a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, I like that you just said when it's past an injury. Are there any actual universal maybe symptoms or hallmarks where I should be like, you know what, I need to go to a doctor. I don't think I'm getting better.
It's a great question. You know, everyone has a different stance on this, and I think, you know, with I think people when they're younger don't want to go to a doctor, and it's, you know, it's sort of a pain in the ass to go to a doctor that is, number one, you know, maybe not going to give you that great of information. And they're going to say, oh, okay, you should go see physical therapy. Right? So that's kind of annoying, because you take the time to make an appointment, you spend the money, and they don't really tell you anything because they don't know. Typically what doctors are going to do is they are going to maybe have you take an x-ray, and unless there was some sort of trauma, you probably didn't break anything, and an x-ray isn't going to do anything. Unfortunately, the way that healthcare works is that typically most insurance companies aren't going to pay for an MRI right away until there's been an x-ray. Now, the difference between the x-ray and an MRI is that when you take an x-ray, what that's looking at is mainly bone. So do you have a fracture or a stress fracture, or I mean, you can see things more malignant like cancers. An MRI is going to be able to see more of the soft tissues, so the tendons, the ligaments. You can tell if you have any sort of contusions in the bone as well. But typically, you're not going to go in and they're going to say, let's do an MRI, because insurance companies aren't going to pay for it. So the process of that can be frustrating, especially to younger people that are generally healthy. You find that generally healthy people don't want to go to the doctor because they don't need to in most cases. So now I can plug my profession a little bit here, because I think that, I guess I'll start with just in the past few years in California, physical therapists have now been given direct access to patients. So a patient can now go directly to a physical therapist
without getting
a prescription from a doctor. And that, you know, that knocks out one step. Unfortunately, depending on the insurance company that you have, sometimes the insurance company won't reimburse if you haven't gone to a doctor first. So there's still some hurdles that are in place from the average person to, you know, that has a sprained ankle or has patellar tendonitis or something that's clearly like an overuse injury for a otherwise young and healthy, active person. To be able to go and get a diagnosis and some sort of prognosis and get them started on activities, or even just, you know, to go and see someone who can say, definitively you need to stop, because sometimes people just need to hear that from somebody else, and they know that they need to stop, but they, for whatever pressures, or you know, they feel like they, or they want to keep training, you know, in all earnest because they love it.
Yeah.
But sometimes people just need to hear it. You need to stop training. What's the question? when people should go and get help, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be different for everybody. Younger people are probably going to wait longer.
Like until the pain is probably
Until it's unbearable. As people get older, I think that, you know, their body just makes them stop sooner. And that's when they maybe go and see somebody else, or they post on Facebook, this is what's going on with me. Does anybody know what I should be doing? Because there's maybe not a lot of guidance. Everyone wants to get better as quick as possible, and so it doesn't hurt to ask around and see what people have to say about it, especially in a community like Capoeira where, you know, everybody's probably seen just about everything. You got to listen to your body, and just know that when you do wait longer, it usually things don't just go away. And the longer that you wait, or the more you put it off, put off dealing with it, the longer it takes to heal, get better. Usually end up in worse shape. And so you can find me online at Victory Performance and Physical Therapy on Facebook, at Victory Performance PT on Instagram, Twitter, the handle is at Victory Perform PT, and that's BCTRY Perform PT. The website is www.victoryperformancept.com. We put up some good content, exercises, stretches, current events, street art type things, sometimes music that inspires me, different cool stuff. So come check us out.
Yeah, we'll put up the link on our Facebook and our Twitter, and also this episode as well.
Awesome.
Where we can find you.
Awesome. And right now, what I'm going to be doing is different workshops in the area to help capoeiristas learn how to better take care of themselves and do all the prehab stuff so they don't need to go to rehab. So we're doing some mobility workshops in the area. And if you have any questions specific to yourselves, feel free to DM me or shoot me an email or even give me a call, and we'll see what we can do to get you back in the game.
All right, cool. Thank you so much for coming. Not even coming. I don't have a studio, but thanks for coming to do the show.
Yeah.
Like, I really appreciate it.
For sure.
We've known each other for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, this is awesome. First in his class, first Capoeira podcast. I love it.
First professional, pretty much. I'm
awesome. Sure. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoy listening to this episode. Definitely tell us what you think on our Facebook page, Twitter, the Capoeira podcast, and definitely check out Santos's page, Victory Performance, and hopefully. If you guys have any schools out there that you want him to come and do a workshop, definitely hit him up.